Now I can hit record. All right. Welcome, folks, to the Aries Working Group B call, the 18th of November. We have a couple of really good topics, assuming that that Tomislav is scheduled. We'll see if he actually, if he makes it. We'll give him a couple more minutes. Anyway, please mind the Hyperledger Code of Conduct and the Antitrust Policy. You're welcome to add yourself to the attendees list. I have the link to the meeting agenda is in the chat. Is there anyone new today that would like to introduce themselves? All right. Well, we're glad you're all here. On announcements, the only thing I really have as a question, next week is Thanksgiving holiday in the United States. I would prefer personally to take that day off if that is allowable. My question is, should we hold a meeting anyway? Should we just call it off for next week for the holiday? Any preferences or opinions about that?
I'll likely be off as well.
Is anyone opposed to the call being off for the holiday next week enough to host it? Any thoughts, George or Steven?
I think it's fine. I think we let it go.
Yeah, I think it's fine. Like, if there's no quorum, then, you know, there's no point.
Right. Certainly. Okay, so we will not have I'm writing this down here to remind myself that I need to make those associated adjustments so folks don't show up to a meeting that didn't happen, which mysteriously happened this morning. Actually, the A call did not occur. And we don't know why yet, but that's okay. So no meetings next week for U.S. Thanksgiving. I haven't looked ahead into December yet around the Christmas holiday or New Year's to see where we land, but we'll handle that in the upcoming weeks. Related meetings review. I will kick that off by mentioning the DIDCOM working group. Had a good discussion about Tomislav, which I'm hoping he asked to also have some of it here today. There was an IW session about application of binary protocols for DIDCOM v2 that he was planning to do at IW and didn't get a chance to, and wanted to share some thoughts and get some feedback. So that is on the schedule today if he's able to make it. But we discussed that on the DIDCOM call, and it was a good conversation, but I don't feel like we ended up with a conclusion on the topic. So that will be, I think, useful to continue discussion on. Other meetings. I know this is the call for the identity implementers call.
Yes, we are on tomorrow morning at the normal time, 9 a.m. Mountain, 4 p.m. UTC. And I've invited Stephen Curran of BCGov to present on one of their efforts to migrate libIndy into multiple shared libraries. And so I look forward to hearing how that's going.
I'm also looking forward to that. I think I might have a conflict, so I might have to catch up on a recording, but that should be really good. Other meetings.
We had the IndyDid method meeting is proceeding. We had another good meeting this week. We've pretty well settled on what the method specific identifier will look like. There's basically four variations of it. But we're settled on that. And then we're now moving on to conversations about how discovery will be done. Obviously, one method of discovery will be hard-coded config files, but we're talking next week about how networks can contain an entry on the ledger that says, here's where you can find other interoperable networks that we've decided to post about, that we as a network have decided to post about.
Cool. So using one network to discover other networks.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's the conversations we've had to this point. We're getting crunchier into, okay, now we need to start putting some code out there. So I think within the next meeting or two, we'll have some requirements for code changes that need to go in. Notably, things to do with attributes and what data goes into attributes and how we define how different ledger objects get stored as DIDs, and we can extract the data relative for those objects from DID docs.
Does this involve the Kyle proposal as part of this?
What is the Kyle proposal?
About storing DID docs on the ledger?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, yes, that's pretty likely what we're doing, which is, yeah, the NIM and the attribute where the attribute is has a DID doc data element and extracted, yes.
Cool.
Steven?
Yeah.
The discovery method you talked about, is the intent that the existence of another network on the ledger for your network, is that going to be an understanding that there is a governance agreement between the networks, or is it simply a discovery method?
That will be left to the different ledgers is the idea of it. There will be a record that's written. I would imagine, again, the conversation is next week, so join us. But
I'd love to.
Our expectation is that a privileged DID will write a record that says, here's the networks we know about. And that will provide information on it. Now, we may provide other pointers within that, so you could find out under what measure are they trusting them, but that's the basic idea.
Okay. Thank you.
Interesting. You just got my brain spinning on ways to block spam attacks against that sort of a thing. But that's for the discussion. So really good. Good to hear about that work there. That's incredibly useful in the evolution towards network of networks. Other calls.
Indie contributors, we are talking lots about Indie Node and Indie SDK releases, that's coming up. One thing that is becoming clearer is somehow we need a contributor to focus on upgrading to Ubuntu 2004. That work has not been completed, is not ready to merge. We need that finished. So we need to, as a community, figure out, as an indie community, not an Aries community necessarily, but as an indie community, need to figure out how that work is going to get done. So that'll be a topic on Indie Contributors Call. We're on a deadline, we're on the clock for that. And so it's got to happen.
Yes. Very good. Other calls before we work on to releases and work updates. All right, Aries Protocol Test Suite. Keith? Keith might be busy. Aries Agent?
Sorry,
Just
step back. Nothing new. I do want to sync up with you, Steve, on on writing a back channel for the test harness, though, which is next.
Okay, sounds good.
And test harness.
The pipeline, as I say, mentioned last week, that's now fully running and we're getting reports. The visualization work was done. We had a demo of that. So we're now seeing some pretty cool visualizations coming out. And we also had a good incident today where we discovered an unanticipated incompatibility in the main branch of ACAPI that would have messed a few things up in a pretty nasty way. So that was a good thing. We're running these tests on a daily basis.
Very cool. Aries shared library work.
Andrew is continuing to make progress. It looks like within, likely by the end of the week, it'll at least move into BCGov. Askar will move into at least BCGov, if not Hyperledger, or at least we'll start the discussion about moving it into Hyperledger. Continuing to make tweaks and adjustments to Akapai to enable it, doing things like new search approaches, new transaction approaches to prevent locking and to create to prevent multiple parties trying to undertake the same operation. So really good progress, and Andrew keeps holding back on giving us execution numbers, so he's still working on that. One of the other things he's doing is that Indie Credex library is being folded into the Indie Shared RS library, and that will allow to simplify that the support requirements for that.
Cool. And the call tomorrow morning, the identity implementers call, will have an update from you on that stuff.
Yeah,
which is awesome.
Yep.
Aries Cloud Agent Python.
Not too much to report. The big thing, we continue and likely, it's very likely that BCGov will be doing a bounty. And so people can start to, might be interested in that. Getting to W3C verifiable credential support with CKP and selective disclosure based on BBS Plus. So we've got sort of an outline of what we want to propose and expect that we'll be posting a bounty for that to enable that work. And we're just looking at, finalizing the scope of that and what to put out, how to position that as a opportunity for developers to contribute.
Very cool. Aries Framework Go.
Hey, so Troy's not here. We've already implemented a basic support for BBS Plus signatures. You guys are, most of you on this call already know that. We just implemented some interop testing with Matters implementation. So next stop on that front is, the useful stuff, which is implementing support for selective disclosure. So that's we have our engineer Dimitri, who was here last week. We have him working on that right now. And we also started adding support for resolution of DID web. That's pretty much all the news for this week.
Very cool. Do we have Jack? Here's SDK Ruby. All right, other frameworks that folks want to report on. We have some updates coming to the toolbox real soon now that allow the toolbox to be a client for mediation. It can use a mediator to connect with other agents and also has some demonstration of some updated mediation protocol stuff that is coming in Akapai. So that is coming. I hope to have a demo today, but I'm not quite there. So, but that will be coming really soon. Anything else before we move on to our agenda? All right. I do want to change the order just slightly. Phil from SCORE brought up a concept this morning about the trust over IP interop efforts and Aries interop profiles. And we had talked about that a little bit last week in this meeting and wanted to sort of kick off a discussion to figure out the right sort of interaction between communities. Phil, do you have an introduction for us to the opportunity?
Sure. Thanks, Sam. So for those, I'm not sure who on the call here is familiar with the work going on at Trust Over IP and the Technology Stack Working Group, but they are creating, or they have the concept of what they're calling Trust Over IP Interop Profiles, which are kind of targeted architectures based on a set of a defined set of standards protocols through the four layers of their trust over IP stack. The first one that they've defined is called Saturn V TIP, which defines for layer one in Indy network, for layer two and layer three Aries. So what we've done for Canis is we were invited to participate in the testing, and it turns out we are the first ones using the Aries framework Go testing. I'm sorry, using the Aries framework Go as part of the testing. And we, of course, immediately ran into a number of problems because of the nature of how far along framework Go is with some of its protocol supports compared to what is defined in this particular tip. In addition, as we've gone through this, it's become clear that questions have come to mind about how we should, or if we should, coordinate the efforts of the any trust over IP interop profile defined that uses Aries as part of its stack definition. So for example, in our testing, we found, you know, there's no version that actually satisfies. So first of all, part of the what they're calling wave one, and it's a little cloudy right now how they're defining the different parts of phases of the testing for a particular tip. But in wave one right now, it specifically targets Aries interop profile 1.0, but then it adds a couple of other things to it, unfortunately, some of which are contradictory. But so as we were trying to test Aries framework, test Canis using the framework Go, there's no version of framework Go that supports AIP one. As protocols were moved to version two, old protocols weren't maintained. So there is a version that has, for example, issue credential and present proof version one, but then the next version has just version two, and there was no maintenance of the old versions. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing. And then, you know, we're in a spot where we're trying to retrofit to support version one, which is not an easy task because of all of the great work that's been done in framework Go. And we're wondering if we move on to AIP2, will there be a tagged version to support that? So that just brought to mind two questions that I mentioned in this morning's call that I wanted to bring up here so that we could have a discussion about them. And one is, do we need some kind of, or is there an appetite for some kind of formal process for keeping the TOIP efforts in sync? Those are use case based, and could they be used to drive specific protocols into an Aries protocol, an Aries interop profile, or the other way around, should the Aries profiles drive them? And then the other one that came to mind is, should the Aries interop profiles guide or at least inform roadmaps for any of the frameworks that are defined under the Aries umbrella? So if a framework in the AIP RFC, it lists the type of frameworks that could fall under an AIP, for example, an agent or a verifier and an issuer. And if a framework falls under one of those categories, should their roadmap include a version that supports a particular AIP? Because we're playing the role of as a vendor coming in here, trying to use one of the frameworks and use it in a trust over IP tip that says Aries interopt, and we can't interopt with any other of the frameworks under Aries. And so I'm wondering if that's something that as a community we should start doing.
Phil, thanks for the intro. So this touches on a number of things sort of at the same time. I am very curious what folks in the community think about this, or observations or opinions about what ought to be done here. Any thoughts?
This is George. I'd just like to note that they're good points, Philip. I do not disagree at all. One of the primary motivations for Aries framework Go to sort of like leapfrog preemptively into V2 was trying to land in a more, let's say, on more neutral grounds, instead of just staying in purely indie based sort of like soup. which is where AIP 1.0 comes from. And we are really driven to work under formal standards that work across, you know, multiple implementations. So that I just wanted to offer that point of view to give you some context, or and to give this whole forum a context as to why Aries Framework Go has moved the way it does.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, George, I think it's great. And in the future, it's going to be a huge benefit to be working on top of the framework that's where it is right now. I guess I just was asking the question, is there a way for us as a community to ensure that these frameworks will be able to, that someone in the future will be able to come back and say, okay, if I pick this tag from Framework Go and this tag from Akapai, I can be guaranteed they'll work against each other.
I mean, that's absolutely where we're trying to get to. The, you know, defining AIP2 as is next on the agenda, I think, is a huge part of it. Excuse me, I had to sneeze there and couldn't even say I'm about to sneeze. Okay, and then we have active development and in getting to, you know, the items that allow us to integrate with Aries Go. So that work is going on. And then the other piece is on the indie side is being able to do things like when we get to, you know, when we get to the DID method, being able to, you know, store the specialized objects that are indie specific in a DID so that we could actually put them on any ledger and still be able to do the verifiable credential exchange. That too is another big goal of ours, to enable, you know, even more flexibility without the, I don't remember what word George used, but the indie world, let's just leave it at that.
Stephen, do you have a list of RFCs and their versions which are required in order for to interoperate with Aries Framework Go?
That to me is what we need to define as part of AIP Next.
Well,
know, I was list right there out of band DID exchange and credential exchange V2, I think are the major ones.
That includes present proof? Is that why it's?
Yes. Cool? Yeah. Credential exchange would be present proof as well. Okay. Those are the ones. Then the second part of that, though, is within the credential exchange, which models are supported in Go. I know those are different ones. And again, that's got to be considered. For us, the direction we'd like to see is obviously to go to BBS Plus and be able to exchange credentials based on that.
Yeah, and Framework Go is already pretty far ahead on that.
Yeah.
So I think one of my observations, Phil, is that it's a bit of an unfortunate time because AIP 1 is now, we've had it for a while and it's been useful, but we're looking towards next. And so it sounds like they have picked AIP 1 plus some stuff. When AIP Next might have been a more useful target. I didn't realize they actually were at least partially relying on an AIP, which is kind of useful. And I think that what that means is that the Trusted RFP interoperability profile can reference sort of a sub package targets like they did. Only ideally, maybe a little more collaboration can motivate the creation of one that works or is useful for that particular thing rather than this sort of happened and I didn't really follow it. So
I agree.
The Aries community couldn't really do anything to support the effort.
Right.
So I think one of the concerns I have is that the support for BBS Plus, if we prereq AIP2 on support for BBS Plus, I think that's going to push out any interoperability testing, you know, with anything between Aries Framework Go and others.
Could some of these be used in parallel with each other? I mean, could a platform support both types of credentials and still be, you know, interoperable at a certain AIP level?
Absolutely, and that's that is part of it. Is out of band did exchange are really the two that are preventing any sort of interop testing at all between Aries Go and the other frameworks.
I spent last week implementing the connection protocol in Go to try and get us past that.
Yeah. I mean, clearly, based on the positioning of the Aries Go team, there will never be an on creds version. That's George. You guys have been pretty clear on that. So to get interoperability, we're not going to be able to stick with Indy. However, of course, Indy is going to be crucial for the rest of the framework. So Credential Exchange will continue to support that. We see an interim step as being able to temporarily, and we really want to be careful in this, because we don't want to stop at this interim step, because we think it's not good for the community and not good overall for verifiable credentials. But we can use the non-ZKP JSON LD signatures exchange or format as another tool which would allow interoperability with Aries Go, but of course loses the key, you know, features that we want to see, which is sort of ZKP and selective disclosure. So we do see that as another middle ground, as a step along the way, so that you know, we don't have to wait all the way till BBS Plus is there before we get some interoperability testing. We can at least verify the protocols and exchange credentials.
So Steve, if you go down that path, what libraries would you use for that non-ZKP model that you're talking about?
So this is the DHS SVIP PlugFest set of libraries. Okay. So there is a thing called, I think it's linked data signatures is the term. I was looking the other day to figure out if I could nail it right down, but I couldn't with 100% accuracy, but I believe that's what it's called. But regardless, it's the credential exchange mechanism that was demonstrated at the SVIP PlugFest. And one supported in that library.
All the languages that Indy SDK supports?
What's that?
What languages are supported by that library?
I think a reasonable range. Does anyone know? George, would you know?
Sorry, I kind of missed the question.
The SVIP linked, I believe they call linked data signature.
Yep.
What languages can use that signature?
Language. What do we mean by language?
I know we've got an implementation in Python.
Oh, okay. Programming languages.
Yeah. Yes.
So, that's right. Framework Go supports it, of course, and has supported it for quite a while now. Linked data proofs. So,
and that is a prerequisite for BBS Plus, right?
Yes, correct. BBS Plus signatures actually rely on JSON LD documents and LD proofs, and Framework Go does verifiable credentials currently with in JSON LD format. So yeah, I don't know.
The question was what other languages are supported?
I can't answer that question right now. Okay. Sorry, Steve.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I just know that some guy who's on the call today, Sam, funded by SICPA, implemented those in ACAPI. They're just not implemented in a way that can be exchanged via Aries protocols.
Yeah, so the crypto mechanics are there.
Exactly.
It is not involved in the protocol at this point. It could be. There's nothing stopping it but work, right?
Yeah.
I do want to point out that the Ares framework Go is capable of exchanging indie style credentials over the protocol. You have to do some work out of the framework, but I have succeeded in doing that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Sorry, I wasn't aware of that. You told me that. You know what? I should have been aware of it. That's awesome.
The framework's incredibly flexible in the way it layers out the different pieces of it. So you can very pretty easily swap out portions of it, protocols, data store, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And, right. Excellent. Yeah. Okay. So as soon as we have out of band and did exchange, we can actually run interop tests and so on.
It sounds like that's what we could do the soonest. I'm not sure that is going to affect the tip, the Saturn V project necessarily, but it sure would give us a better target for that.
Yes.
No, I think actually it could, because I think what we would like to define the next tip for to be is something that would allow that the minimal amount that would allow that exchange.
Yeah, I think that's inside of the Saturn V tip, right? What they're calling Wave 2. Is that what you're referring to, Keith?
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
So work to define an Ares interop profile too, or next, whatever we name it, number it, would be useful then in that wave.
Absolutely. And I think a collaboration between the two groups would be wonderful.
So I do want to...
Noah, could you add links to the Saturn V tip?
Yeah, absolutely.
That'd be great.
Yeah, that would actually be super useful.
Yeah.
So it strikes me that what we're really waiting for the AIP is a proposed PR to the Ares in our profile RFC that details these things out with the versions, and that way we can identify any writing that needs to be done on any of the features that we hope to lock into that.
Right. One of the things that was suggested today is that we, just as we talked about in Provo, this is the goal of AIP-1. I think we need to revise that for AIP-2. I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't change much, the goal, but that will still greatly change. It will change the versions of things that we want. So even if we really just stick to almost the same ones, upgrading to Credential Exchange Protocol 2, Feature Discovery 2, whether we decide to add to the AIP or how we add to the AIP, what credential formats we support, and on-creds, BBS Plus, et cetera, which ones or how we would introduce those are all useful topics to have as we talk about AIP next.
So given that, do we have anyone that has already decided that they're going to attempt to write that PR to define AIP 2 or next or whatever it is?
I so should take that.
I could be involved.
I will take it.
Steven.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Okay, sounds like you have some assistance in Phil. That's certainly worth a review as soon as it comes in. And then that would be wonderful to discuss, which of course won't be next week, but the week after.
Yeah.
And so that would be a huge move forward for nailing that down.
Yep.
Okay.
The last question was, is there, or does anyone foresee an appetite for having AIPs be targets for releases for these frameworks to help resolve these problems in the future?
Yeah, well, I think
that's the intention of AIPs was exactly
that. Is the intention, okay.
All right. Yes, that is totally the intention.
Yeah, that is the intention. That my hesitation was that you asked for like a tag and we'd have to figure out how that actually worked. But the idea, the idea is you could say, yeah, these are the things that support it. It's possible for a software package to support an Ares in our profile over a range of releases, right? It became compliant at, x.x, and it is still compliant at x.y or whatever. Right. And so that's possible too. So, but I think it should be nice that if you go to a software package that cares about the AIP, that there's maybe a note that says, if you're looking for AIP one, here's what you should check out.
Right.
Maybe
a GitHub AIP badge.
Or something, right? Well, one to say that you're compliant, but it's also possible in the future that if you decide that you're going to sort of deprecate AIP 1 because we're on AIP 7 or whatever in the future, then you might still refer to older stuff. If people desire to use it with AIP 1, they should go target this release. Is maybe the newest version that still supports that. So, okay. Cool. So I appreciate this discussion. I think we do have a cool opportunity to support larger interop efforts with our own interop targets. And I think that we'll be able to move relatively fast on this one as a function to sort of get those things happening. So I think that will be a useful thing. Any other comments before we turn the screen over to Tomislav for his discussion? All right, Tomislav, I think that means you're up.
All right. Hi, everybody. So today we'll talk about an interesting thing that we've been working on for the past few weeks. It's a DIDCOM extension for gRPC. What this is actually is we were trying to explore usage of binary protocols with DIDCOM. And I was actually preparing this presentation for IW, but didn't have a chance to finish it and complete all the POCs that I was intending to do. Sorry about the noise. What is this extension? First of all, what defines an extension to DIDCOM? I presented this on Monday during the DIF DIDCOM group and kind of learned some things around how to have a conversation and what some things mean. A DIDCOM extension would really mean defining, if you look at the DIDCOM protocol in its very simplest form, we define a DIDCOM extension as a set of standards and rules that capture the data transport, the security layer, and the message contracts in the exchange. So looking at the exchange, Alice to Bob, they send messages over DIDCOM. The first step is they pack that message, encrypt it using their individual DID keys, DID method. Keys or keys found in their documents, to be specific. Send that message over the wire, decrypt on the other side, and receive the message. The message contracts that Alice and Bob agree on talking are the message contracts. They're the message families that we define in DIDCOM. The transport can be any transport for transferring electronic messages. And then they also agree on the encryption and decryption of schemes. So an extension needs to cover all of these points in order to be considered sort of an extension to it. What we're going to look at here is an extension that uses protocol buffers, which is a binary serialization protocol developed by Google and gRPC. Which is a combination of using protocol buffers over HTTP2 transport. gRPC and protocol buffers both rely heavily on code generation. They're available for all platforms. And the good thing about using protocol buffers, for those of you who have worked with protocol buffers and know how convenient they are at defining a consistent message structure across different platforms. I'm going to switch to here. I did have a slide for this, I just forgot. All right, gRPC, the transport. Yeah, I do want to mention this. So gRPC is built on top of HTTP2, even though it can run over HTTP1 as well. The differences between HTTP1 and HTTP2 is the ability for HTTP2 to have request response that is asynchronous, doesn't depend on a request and response that's directed by the client, makes a request, server sends a response, but they can send multiple requests and then multiple responses that are asynchronous to each other within the concept, within the scope of a single socket connection, which makes HTTP do a lot more performant. Protocol buffers, how do they look like? So protocol buffers is a interface definition language. They define a syntax that's very similar to this. So define the message structure, the type of the messages, and then the services that can be defined by this RPC service. In these four variations, unary server streaming, client streaming, and bidirectional streaming, which kind of define what is the level of or the direction of streaming that can be done, in the sense that can the client send multiple messages to the server, or the server, or can both keep sending messages as long as their connection is up. And an implementation of this kind of service in JavaScript and C# is just very simple. You receive the message that somebody sent. That message will be serialized and deserialized into language idiomatic way. So for JavaScript, we can see how the syntax looks, and also for C#, for example, looks more C#y, so to say. Once we have this implementation written in any language that's on the server side, the ability to communicate with that is immediately available on all languages. So we don't have to write the message contracts or the services or the service calls specifically. What this does when we, if we want to apply this in a become concept, is this allows us to create or to cover a lot of languages that are able to communicate with each other, provided we define a set of messages that they already agree on, which makes it a very good candidate for a messaging protocol like DITCOM to actually use a message first serialization, which is protocol buffers. Extension architecture. So what this plugin or extension is consisted of is two things, a set of protocol buffers and dev message definitions for each of the purposes for it. And also a native plugin, well, I guess three things, a native plugin, which is written in Rust that does the security related functions like packing and unpacking messages, signing, verifying, and then some utilities for generating keys. The signature and algorithm schemes that are supported in the plugin are the ones that are defined in the Aries, in the DITCOM spec. Well, Aries uses the same as well, which are two encryption schemes and three different key types. The native plugin exposes a foreign function, C-callable foreign function interface that is available to all languages. They use internally, both internally for communication between the plugin and native libraries, but also within them, protocol buffers at different levels. So it's used protocol buffers is used at the transport level for packing or transporting the encrypted messages. It is used also in the application domain. This is where, for example, we will define message families for credential exchange. Let's say credential request and response would be defined as application domain messages. And then the FFA messages are used really just as a pattern to call the native library from the different languages. And the reason why this we made this decision is because it allows us to have a very simple FFA interface to call the native library, while having a complex data type. What this allows us is to write very, very simple platform-specific wrappers around the native plugin while having any amount of complex requests and responses in it. I can I'm going to switch back to this. So these are a couple of examples of what the native method looks like. And they all look the same. So packing and signing, they both have request and response. That's just a byte buffer, which is later serialized and deserialized into their corresponding request and response. And the usage in each specific language, for example, if you want to generate a key, this is just given as an example here, would be whatever the tooling gRPC and protocol buffers tooling generates these messages into. So this is the defining and generating messages is really done usually in a sort of a build step. are there any questions so far? All right. So the next layer of what this extension, what this plugin does is it defines the security messages also through protobuf. So looking at DITCOM defines this core message in a JWM, which is a JWM message. This message can be represented in protobuf very simple. We simply map down all the fields to the corresponding data types, and we have binary serialization of that message. And in a very custom messages, this was a message given in the example. Custom messages are defined separately, and custom messages are added on the core message through the body field. So in JavaScript, this would just be an object that's appended to the body. In protocol buffers, you would just call the native a specific thing that turns the message into a binary serialization. This is called byte string in C#. The next levels of messages related to security are the JWE and JWS message, which are used for message encryption and for message signing. So this can also be defined in protobuf, using proto syntax. This is just one take that we did on how this an encrypted message can be represented. And this is also part of the plugin functionality that we have. These fields come directly from the JWE standard. They're mapped here just for easy conversion between JSON and protocol buffers, though there's no need to have a direct conversion or direct interoperability, although it is possible to achieve that, and I guess that's open to some discussions, but for now, it uses a very similar structure. It allows a message to be encrypted to multiple recipients, each with different keys. And then the fields are mapped to the individual DID key that participates in this exchange. And very similarly, the message signing is done using a signed message. This is the JWS format that has a header and a signature, and the messages can be transported over the wire, depending on what the services are defined. The last thing that I have here is the endpoints and transport. So how can an extension that use different protocol be represented? We've already talked about the MIME types that we want to show a certain service supports. So in HTTP/1, we would have content type where we send a post request to the agent that has this content type, and then this would be a binary payload. With HTTP/2, gRPC specifically, because gRPC allows us to define services that can have the transport of the core message or the encrypted message directly with defining the direction of the streaming, if any streaming is enabled. We can additionally also agree on using this kind of approach for the services. which would actually, it wouldn't change the actual standardization of using POST. It'll just use a standard service, predefined service. This is how a request would look like in HTTP2, so it can be done using the same thing. If we choose to use REST style APIs, we'll just post a message over HTTP2 and just use the same content type for it. How would these services be represented in a service in a DID document for the service types that support them? This is a DIDCOM service. You over HTTP1 or one variation of showing the service using these two content types. So this is an agent that supports both JSON encrypted format and a protobuf encrypted format. And this would be how an additional service that supports the gRPC capabilities of streaming can be described additionally. So it is the same. It is the same type of service. It doesn't have to be. It can definitely have its own define its own type. And additionally, it has a content type of this and shows what endpoint capabilities it has. So this service accepts unary request and response, but it also does server streaming. And we have a little demo on how these two behave. Supported platforms. So the native libraries within Rust, we do have .NET libraries that are available for .NET Core and Xamarin, not for WebAssembly, but that's coming. And Objective-C and Swift, WebAssembly for Node, and we're working on adding the rest of the libraries. The writing a wrapper for this is actually fairly simple. I could show you what a WebAssembly wrapper, for example, looks like for GitCom gRPC. It is pretty simple in the sense that all of the methods look exactly the same. Basically, what they do is they take these code-generated request and response messages and they send them to the native by doing a binary serialization to it. And that's it. So this makes it really, really easy to write not just wrappers for all of the languages, but also to maintain the wrappers and to make extensions and changes to it. All you would do is you would redefine the protobuf message that defines the API, and the changes would be propagated to the native library without actually doing any changes to the wrappers itself. I also wanted to show the actual protobuf definitions. So the repo defines messages. This is where these are the API specific protobuf messages. So a request response message. This is used for calling the native library. Basic message, this is just an example of defining an application or a domain specific basic message. DIDCOM, this is the core message with service definitions defined for exchange of plain messages over DIDCOM or encrypted messages or a scenario where you would send an encrypted message but don't necessarily need a response or the response is empty. And the security defines the JWS and JWE representations of this plugin. And as for a demo, this repo has two samples. They both implement the same functionality. One is in .NET, the other one is in WebAssembly, and in Node. It's the greeter sample. I will actually open it here. So what I will do is just to showcase the interrupt out of the box feature that this plugin kind of brings this is a very simple implementation of a greeter service. So Alice and Bob decide to talk with each other. Alice sends a message. She packs the message just like we saw on the initial picture. the message goes over to transport. Bob gets the message. This is the server implementation of it. The steps that Bob needs to take to understand and respond to this message is he would unpack the message using his secret key and Alice key, which does a key exchange. The message then is transformed into basic message because that's the type that we're expecting. Otherwise, we could read the DITCOM type for it and say and interpret the message that way. Bob sends a message back, prepares the message with a reply. He packs or encrypts the message, again, using the key exchange with the corresponding DIDs. I can show you the keys here, how they're defined. We're using DID key here because of the flexibility, being self-asserting and not needing to go to a ledger and fetch the resolution of the keys. So Alice and Bob have two corresponding keys. This, so both the client and server agree on. And the message is sent back. This is a unary response. Well, let's see how that looks like. So I do have a server that's already running here. And I will run a client. So the client is defined in Node. The implementation is here. We can see what the client does in a unary scenario. So Alice starts, she packs the message using a pack request and sends a unary. And when she receives a response, she unpacks it and prints everything in kind of a chat style thing. So we'll run this in MPL1 client. Here we can see this is the Alice key that she will use for this interaction and Bob's key. And we can say something to Bob. So I can say, hi there, Bob. And Bob responds with, you said, hi there, Bob. Another scenario, this was a unary where Alice sent a request and she received a response back. Another scenario would be using the streaming scenario, which is pretty powerful. And what this implementation does is instead of Bob streaming back, sending back the individual message, he will send it letter by letter. And each of those will be packed into its own message. So this is how that looks like. Bob, and Bob streams everything back. So Alice sent one request and then Bob streamed individual messages. This is a very interesting approach for use cases where server streaming is required or is needed to achieve real-time communication. This essentially replaces the use of WebSockets. HTTP2 in general kind of makes WebSockets obsolete in that sense. Because of the ability to do binary bidirectional communication. But what is interesting here is we can see this entire process completed in 79 milliseconds, and this is running in debug mode, but each individual message was processed pretty fast. And so what each of these requires is packing and unpacking, encrypting and decrypting the messages, and it also includes the over-the-wire transfer. Granted, that goes over a local connection right now, but still it does show a significant performance improvement over traditional request response or HTTP1 and using a JSON serialization, which is a lot slower than protocol buffers. I think that's it. That's all I had. Any questions?
So I have a meta question, right, Tomislav, that we didn't have a chance to talk about last time you presented this. That is, there's clearly some awesome speed and likely some size advantages, although you didn't include that here. One of my questions that I'm wondering is the effect from a community perspective on interoperability and pushing this, right? It has some advantages, but is it you know, what's the up and down of promoting this as an alternate instead of just, you know, promoting the base foundation that we've got, even though it isn't nearly as efficient.
So
I don't have any answers there. That's just the questions that I have.
Yeah. No, I know. I mean, that's an interesting discussion. This is in the context of DITCOM. Really, the functions of a DITCOM is only how we transport the messages securely, and that's it. Everything else beyond that is, you know, what applications define. And in that sense, DITCOM does very little. It really just does a simple transport. So as long as if an extension or a plugin like this can deliver a functionality in a way that it can bootstrap all of the other current implementations with additional support for it, then I think it does a lot. And it's probably going to improve the adoption of DITCOM as a protocol. When we think about DITCOM and we think about ARIES, what ARIES currently does is does a lot of things. So the credential exchange and connection invitations, none of that is actually part of DITCOM as a core protocol, which is we exchange secure messages, or at least not at the transport level where messages are packed and we don't actually work with them. So, again, in that sense, I think if an implementation like this can help somebody write their application in Dart, for example, or in a language that there's no ARIES, so there's no DITCOM library developed, then I think that's definitely a plus. But
yes, but then they can only talk with people that have also implement this extension and do it the same way, right?
Right, right.
So yes, they can, and yes, all the magic happens on top of that of the relatively simple layer. Except we all got to do the relatively simple layer in compatible ways in order for the magic on top of it to happen.
Right. Well, again, if this library manages to add a pluggable way to any framework and application, then all you would have to do is, for example, in EKAPI say, hey, now also support this kind of transport in addition to what you have. And, you know, based on the content type, you can decide which pipeline to run it through. Then you know, it would be easy to adopt it, right? Because it only does the transport end to end. Then later, if you want to process indie credentials or JSON-LD credentials, that's up to the message handlers that are using that. But
that's true.
I mean, interesting questions, yeah, definitely.
And that's the idea. I mean, the other thing too, though, is that it's not like it's JSON wrapped into something else. It's an entirely separate representation, which means that any software platform that does this needs to be able to handle a message received via, dare I say, DITCOM normal and DITCOM gRPC the same way. It would need to be able to represent internally or access the attributes of the message in a way that's consistent between the two.
Sure, yes. But then, I mean, if you look at the basic message, at the core message, this is really just something serialized into bytes. Nothing says that this has to be a protobuf message. It's going to be a JSON serialized into base 64 byte array or just a byte array. And then from that point on, you process it as a JSON message. So the transport itself is opinionated because it wants to achieve point-to-point protocol, interoperability protocol. But then applications and how they use that can be entirely, you know, up to the implementers to do that.
Right.
They don't have to use protobuf to encode messages here. We can encode the JSON messages that we use today in ARIES, for example.
You could. It seems that you would lose some of the advantages of having it be protobufs all the way down in terms of both speed and size.
Right. We do.
So what do you see as next for this effort?
Standardizing, actually writing a standard for the encryption, the sign and encrypt messages. in a similar way how JWS DLE have a standard. Doesn't have to be as standardized as the current JSON and CBOR standards are, mostly because protocol buffers generally don't have a very strict spec for agreeing on a schema, because the schema is very easy to define just by they doing a proto definition. Really just finishing all the base wrappers for the libraries, then thinking about how this can be added onto existing libraries or existing frameworks without require, that doesn't require a lot of re-architecting the implementations of those libraries, or how this can be plugged in. What are the some possible ways of adopting this? Do we start with simply not using gRPC, but just using binary serialization over the standard REST protocol and decorate the content type so that we know what kind of data we're getting? Maybe that's step one. Then step two could be adding support for HTTP2 and gRPC in a pluggable way. I know that I can speak for the .NET because I have done it there. It would be very easy to add the entire stack onto the existing Aries framework for .NET just as a separate middleware that once it generates, once it detects a certain a payload of a certain content type, it takes over from that point on. But some work would need to be done again to extract all the things that are within the inner message, and then find out there are nuanced things. We use the thread ID and a lot of other things to kind of detect who this message is coming from. And I think that some minor work will need to go into that, some refactoring work, but that would be kind of the pathway of doing this.
Can I also ask about what your main goal was in doing this?
Yes, the motivation for this was being able to achieve DID communication that is not so tight or dependent on the current Indy implementation that is all over Aries implementation, for example. Because we're using Aries.NET in our implementation, it's very tied, closely tied to the Indy wallet implementation, it's tied to credentials. DITCOM, in a sense, doesn't define anything at the storage layer. However, using a DITCOM or an Aries library, you're inheriting this entire need to store everything in a wallet because of the tight coupling of current credential libraries with the storage layer. And while there are ways to extend that storage layer, there's still some limitations in how that's done. So we wanted to achieve something that's a little more flexible, a little less opinionated on those sides, and just does and perform that one point-to-point, DID-to-DID communication by using mutual key exchange, do the transport, and then the application can take from that point on.
It seems like a pretty far stretch to not want to use Indyisms to going to a binary protocol. Did I miss something there? Did I misunderstand what you were saying?
No, what do you mean?
Well, I was asking about the motivation for doing this, and your answer, if I could attempt to summarize, was, well, we didn't want to build stuff that was based on, Indy. And
No. Not based on Indy, but using it without inheriting what comes with Indy.
Well, yeah, but the transport of a message, right? The JSON format, for example, has nothing to do with the fact that a wallet is used for storage or anything there. I'm a little lost there.
But that transport is currently in all of the Aries implementations. And right now, in order to become compliant with it, you would have to write an entire library, new library that supports the transport, but doesn't support the credentials because you really just want the transport layer.
Yeah, but Pack Unpack is relatively small, right? We have JavaScript, we have a JavaScript implementation, for example, of Pack Unpack that, right, that isn't super complicated.
Yeah, but we don't have that in Objective-C or Swift or Java. And what this extension did in pretty much a couple of weeks, we were able to write that for a number of languages in a very easy way. That would be common, you know, across the board. And also, this, I mean, even though this extension is written with protocol buffers as the transport layer, that can be added so that it supports also CBOR and also JSON as well. I don't see a reason why it wouldn't. The point was to adopt gRPC and protocol buffers as a possible transport extension.
Right. So there's, I think there's two things going on here, right? One is not using the standard libraries that come with the same assumptions, right, about wallets or whatever else, right, and to be able to have something that's transport only. The second thing was a foray into gRPC and binary formats.
Yeah.
And you did them at the same time, but there, it's sort of two efforts or two issues that I think you were going after.
Yeah.
That was not the answer I expected. I'm glad I asked it. Interesting. Okay. Any other questions? Sorry, I've been dominating the question asking here. Any questions from anybody?
I am not monitoring the chat if anybody asks anything in chat. But I guess not.
Yeah, I don't know if I have a question either. I guess I was also surprised. Definitely don't have to leap all the way to a new binary envelope representation to avoid Indieisms. I mean, of course, in Aries framework, we don't have any Indieisms in that framework. And, you know, we are using the Jose JWE envelopes. I think an unrelated point is, I think a next step across Aries frameworks, it would be nice actually to move to the more standard JWE envelopes even before DITCOM v2. But that's not entirely related to this discussion.
On that note, Troy, it seems like rather than having to revisit that twice, that revisiting it just once as we transition to supporting V2 seems a little bit more streamlined. Are there other advantages to going there first?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, we already implemented the JWE envelope, so it's not at all attached to DITCOM V2. It is something that can be done even before you start adopting the new stuff in DITCOM V2. So I'm just saying there's nothing actually stopping getting to the new JWE envelopes really at any point.
Right. What's the advantage there?
The advantage for us was the ability to use crypto that's outside of what was defined in the original JWE envelopes.
Oh, right. So if you wanted crypto outside of the defined in DITCOM V1, then that step would allow that.
Yeah, and it was also nice to be able, you know, to say, it's you know, the ECDH 1PU that these are at least formats that are referenced in another documentation. So I'd actually say there was two advantages for us in going down this other JWE envelope path.
Right. Are you aware of any other projects that have implemented that?
I can't say that I know that anybody has implemented it. All I can say is I know it's in the Go framework.
Right. And DITCOM V2 does make those changes as well. Right.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. That's what I was going after. So, I mean, there's one framework that's done it, and it is in DIDCOM V2, something very similar, if not the same.
My thought, given the hopeful proximity anyway of V2, was to, for the projects that I edit, right, is to make the jump to V2 all at once to gain those same features. And that way I'm just hitting the project once in that aspect instead of twice. But yes. Other comments for Tomislav? Okay, we are at the end of our agenda. There's one thing that I would like to evangelize just briefly. You've heard me talk before about this issuer-hosted custodial agent thing. This came up, there's an IW session about it. And this is a concept RFC and I haven't been through all the comments in the last couple of days yet, but the idea behind this is it describes best practices for the hosting of agents on behalf of users. And it describes some of the particular stuff here right in the beginning. And then what it has is it has a review of the interaction types that those agents can have. And outlines those here. And then there's a list of best practices as well on how to do this in a way that makes, that is as friendly to decentralized identity and SSI as possible in the process of. So if you have not read that and you're interested, I would welcome your feedback there. As we improve the concepts and, have some writing down that outlines best practices, and I think that will be useful in the community as folks are reaching out to do this. They can lean upon this as a starting place and hopefully use it to generate architectures as a hosted provider, right? That avoids some of the pitfalls that are possible in doing this. So I would invite feedback there. Anything else in the last couple of minutes that we have in the scheduled time for the call? This is a PR, by the way, and we'll follow some process here, and it'll end up with a, being merged in with this RFC number.
Yeah, I didn't have comments, Sam. It would be interesting to also see how that might relate to like the EDV work and stuff like that at some point.
It could. Yeah. I was trying to not fan this out like crazy. And Stephen, I know you asked the question about the issuer hosted aspect of this. It occurred to me in the process that I'm not trying to necessarily write a best practices paper for the universe, but for a narrow slice of thing that I see being more and more common from an architectural perspective or a need to transfer to an SSI architecture from something that is centralized already and some of the issues there. So this was not necessarily an attempt there, and it'll be interesting to see how it does apply to the EDV stuff. That is a form of this, and so some of it will maybe apply and some of it won't, but this was my hope to sort of serialize some of these concepts into sort of a guidance document there. Any comments or any other feedback on any topic from that anyone wants to bring up on the call?
Yes, I actually have a response for Troy. Troy, I'm sorry, I just read all your messages in the chat. Then I want to respond. Yes, I do know that you can use the GWE without Indy. With gRPC, you would have to define a protocol buffer-based message transport. And while you could put a GWE inside it, again, it wouldn't necessarily be ideal. But the reason why we decided to do this as an extension was to extend everything that's defined in DIDCOM. If DIDCOM says you can use JSON messages and you cannot use any other envelope outside of it, then that wouldn't be an extension. But DIDCOM does say that JSON is used for the message exchange, but other protocols can be defined as well. So this is one attempt how to do this. It was intentional and not forced why we wrote JW and JWS in using a Proto syntax.
I guess kind of the motivation was kind of the interesting question, because usually when I see gRPC, it's going to be some kind of performance reason, but it's generally at the expense of, in some cases, of the developer experience, and honestly also in at the expense of a known spec like JWE. So it's always a little bit interesting when trying to come up with some new kind of envelope scheme. And there are other binary forms that are available as well, of course.
Right, right. Seymour has its own
exactly.
scheme. For example, you would probably use that encryption and object signing with Seymour. Protocol Buffers does not have that, but you know, it's very easy to define one. Whether that's a good idea or a smart idea, again, it's up to see what can become out of it. Is that gonna balkanize the community and the integrations, or is it gonna provide more flexibility for adoption, for example? So we're really, it's more of a just an exploratory step and something that we're interested in pursuing.
Yeah, like in the fabric side, gRPC is kind of an interesting thing for going between peers or some of the streaming aspects. But I also find in terms of an API front that it turns out to be more challenging for someone to adopt the gRPC than a more normal JSON kind of endpoint. So
yeah,
it's this kind of balance that you end up with depending on the usage.
That's true. gRPC is also quite new. Actually, the tooling is, I think most of the tooling are in V2 right now, but still it's, HTTP2 even is not fully supported. For example, in a browser, you have to use some polyfills because it doesn't support server-to-server bidirectional streaming. But, Protocol Buffers, on the other hand, is quite well used, especially in a lot of Hyperledger projects. The Hyperledger Sawtooth, for example, uses heavily Protocol Buffers for the entire communication between clients and servers. And that has worked tremendously well for it. Mozilla Foundation uses Protocol Buffers in the same way. Actually, the pattern that we got for using it, using Protobuf over FFI to call the native libraries, was as a method that's used by the Mozilla Foundation to serialize and save messages that are in binary format, very short, and it allows them to do the same thing in different implementations of Mozilla, whether it's in the browser, Windows, or Mac OS, while using the same native library.
Thanks for those question and answers. That's awesome. We are about out of time. Grateful to everyone who came, and may your week be an awesome one. Thanks, Tomislav, for talking us through and explaining the concepts. And we will see you all, not next week, because we're not going to have that one, but the week after. Hope your week's all a great one.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.